Our podcast will begin in just a moment. InvestTalk Distribution is made possible by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. Is April 19th a good day for you? That's when Steve is setting aside a few hours to review retirement portfolios by Skype and telephone, speaking with our podcast subscribers anywhere in the U.S. To save a space on his schedule for April 19th, just go to InvestTalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab and then Portfolio Review. Or just send Steve a note. Click on Contact Steve on InvestTalk.com. End of commercial. Now today's InvestTalk.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Tuesday edition of InvestTalk. It is March 29th. Is it the 29th? Wow. We're near the end of the month. April 1st, I think, comes on Friday. We get a Jaws report coming out then. And of course, you're listening to InvestTalk. We're here to help you break through the barrier, the investing roadblock that stops average investors short. Our mission is always the same, trying to achieve above average investing for the average investor. Now, when you consider buying a stock, do you think of it as actually buying the company? Because that's what you're doing. Investing in the stock market is all about taking ownership in a company for your own benefit. And the best way for a company to benefit you is to create value, shareholder value. And the best way to do that is to make profits, right? Bring in money, bring in the profits. Ultimately, any successful business must create profits and sustainable profits. So what are some of the profitability metrics that we like, that we think should be smart? And of course, the first one is gross margins. And that's the percentage of the revenue a company gets after paying for cost of goods sold. And that's pretty simple for a manufacturing company. You know, it's just you figure out, well, how much for, you know, the actual goods that you made. How much did it cost to make them? For a service business, it's a little different. Now, that is gross margins. Then you have operating margins. There's three kinds of margins that they talk about that's reported all the time. And operating margins are a measurement of what portion of a company's revenue is left over after paying for variable costs of production, such as wages, raw materials, etc. That is, and it's a lot like gross margins, but this includes costs like marketing and depreciation. Remember, gross margin is just how much does it cost to make the goods. Here, it's how much it costs to make the goods and how much it costs to sell it. And depreciation of those goods if they don't get sold. But the most important margin out there is net margin. Think of that as net, net, net. What's left after paying for everything in the company's pocket? Now, what's the difference between operating margin and gross margins and net margins? Net margins includes taxes. Right, we didn't talk about taxes on gross margins or operating margins, but the companies had to pay taxes on their profits. So the key is to have consistent positive net margin, and if they're capable of doing that, that is a viable and sustainable business model. Now those are just margins. There's other metrics that we like: return on assets, return on equity. There's all kinds. But, you know, these are some of the basics that you really should learn. Now, do you have questions about building a more stable portfolio? 888-99-CHART is our anytime number for any money questions you might have. Let's take a question right now.
Hey, guys. This is John from Phoenix. I love your show. Thank you very much for putting it on every day. I have a question. I max out my Roth IRA every single year, and then once I'm done maxing out my Roth, I put the money into just a regular trade account. And it's self-directed Roth. And I was wondering if I should have a SEP IRA. I self-employed, and I was wondering if maybe I should max out my Roth and then max out a SEP and then start putting it into a taxable trade account, or if what I'm doing is okay the way I'm doing it. Thank you very much. I enjoy your show, and I appreciate the response. Thank you.
Well, the simple answer is yes. A SEP IRA, everybody, self-employed, SEP, self-employed IRA, allows you to put more money than a regular IRA away tax-free. Okay? Tax-free. You don't have to pay income taxes on the money you put in a SEP IRA. In a Roth, you do have to pay taxes on the money that you put in it, but all the growth in the SEP in a Roth never is taxed again when you take it out, when you retire. In a SEP IRA, a regular IRA, you do pay taxes when you take it out. All that growth that you had over the years, you have to pay taxes. But the good thing is, if you have extra money, you know, the question is, do you want to protect it now against taxes now, especially if you're making more and more money being self-employed? So you want to have the maximum ability to put away as much as you can, and a SEP IRA is a good way to do it. Just letting you know. So I like the SEP IRA because you can put more money away than in a regular IRA. Okay? And we're talking about the difference between Roth and regular. Now I'm talking about for a SEP IRA, regular SEP IRA. You know, if you make too much profit, and a lot of, see, I don't know, those people who have been self-employed like me for umpteen million years, you have some really good years, you have some really bad years. So you want the freedom to put more or less away for retirement. You know, obviously in the good years, you want to be able to protect more of it and put it toward retirement, because you don't, you know, being a self-employed, you're taking risks every day, every year. You know, you could be out of business in 2 years, 5 years, you don't know. You don't know, you're self-employed. It's a difficult path. One I really like and enjoyed all my years. First 10 years of my career, I didn't. I worked for somebody, worked for big insurance companies. But after that, self-employed, I think that's a really good way to go. Now, do you have the best online broker for you? Best online broker for you. Do you have it? That's going to be our main talking point today. Also, corporate profit margins, which we were just talking about, are shrinking for the overall market. What does that mean for the stock market? We're talking year over year, not just, you know, this quarter or that quarter. Negative interest rate is a high-risk experiment. You know, we've never dealt with this negative interest rate. Europe is into negative interest rates right now. Japan. It's an experiment. What does it really mean? What kind of effect does it have on the economic model? So I want to explore that a little bit. And something a little less deep. Life biases that hurt you financially. Several biases in your life that people just do automatically, don't think about it, that you need to start thinking about. It's interesting because a few of them, there's a couple here I didn't even think about, but now I do. Now I will. But so those are things we're going to discuss today. But of course, your call always comes first, whatever is on your mind. So 888-99-CHART is our number. The market was up nicely today after Janet Yellen spoke. Dow was up 98 points. The NASDAQ was up 80. That's a pretty big percentage. And the S&P up 18. And Janet reiterated her stance on saying, well, we got to be pretty slow and careful about raising rates going forward. Remember, in December, they said they were thinking about 4 rate increases for this year, 2016. And then more recently, after the meeting they had 2 weeks ago, I think it was, they said, well, maybe we're looking at 2 rate increases. Okay, and now she just reiterated that today. That made gold go up because it makes the dollar weaker, right? I mean, if you're not going to raise rates, you're making the dollar weak. If you're raising rates, you're making our dollar stronger. So if you sit back and think about that a little bit, why is she doing that, going from 4 possible rate increases to 2? Well, doesn't that mean that they don't have a lot of confidence that they used to have in our economy? How can you read that any other way? Isn't that how you read it? You don't have the confidence in the economy you had in December. Now here just recently, you have less confidence. Or else you would raise rates. You think that we're going to pick up growth and you think it's going. What you're telling me is you think the economy is going to be kind of more of the same. That's what you think, because you're only going to raise the rates twice. Maybe you ought to raise it once. Was that in December? So you really haven't raised it once even this year. So that just doesn't give me a lot of confidence about the economy. And, you know, I mean, it just doesn't. Doesn't say confidence. I'm financial advisor Steve Pizza, and this is Invest Talk, everybody. We're made possible. This show has been made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, our firm, my firm, Justin's firm. And we're talking about valuing a company. Once you comprehend the basic concept that a share price, a stock, is a percentage of ownership of the company, then it matters how much money the company makes. So how much is a company worth based on how much money it makes? It's all about evaluating stocks. Just go to investtalk.com to subscribe. Our newsletter talks about it all the time. Scroll to the bottom of the page.
Hello, Steve. Hello, Justin. This is Raphael from Jersey calling about a stock, Signet Jewelers, SIG. I just wanted to say that I did a little due diligence on this. It looks like it's broken out of a downward trend and is currently in the 120s. It did hit 150 and there was a market pullback. This thing has been consistently paying dividends and increasing that dividend amount over the years. Looks very good right here. A PEG ratio of 0.7, and I think it's a screaming buy. I want to know what you guys think, especially with commodities rebounding and gold looking like it's about to break out again. So take a look if you could, and I'll listen on the podcast. Thank you.
Okay, this is Signet Jewelries Limited. It's a retailer of jewelry and watches operating 2,868 stores in the U.S., almost 500 stores in the U.K., and they're under the K, Jared, and other names. K Jewelries, Jared Jewelries, and they have other names. It is a very solid company. It's growing its sales. It's growing its earnings. Earnings this year are going to grow by 20%. Next year, grow by 17%. Sales growth has kind of fallen off. A year ago, they were growing in their 40 to 50% range per quarter, and now the most recent quarter is 5% growth. So you can see it's tailed off. Now, the dividend is only 0.8%, so it's not a large dividend, but they have increased it. They don't decrease it, have not. So they have lots of room to increase it. They're going to make $9.67 next year. It's a $122 stock. So that tells you it's going to be about 12 PE, good value, good return on equity at 19%. All the numbers are pretty good, not too much debt. Has some, but not a lot. So I would say, yeah, you got a bunch of good numbers here. And yes, it has broken up above its downward trend line. So this would be a buy point. It still hasn't broken above 200-day moving average, which is about 126, it's 122. But, you know, maybe it is. I might wait till it does do that. I'd feel a little more confidence if it did. I'm just worried about buying any stocks right now as we approach tax time in May. I just don't want you to get overly excited. I want deep value. This is a good value. It's not a deep value, but a good one. So it's a good stock to have in your portfolio. But you know, you're gonna it probably go back down to 95 any correction of significance. So if you don't think we're gonna have a correction of significance this year, then this would be a place where you'd buy it. It's a good company. It's a good solid company. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, and this is Invest Talk, everybody. This is an opportunity for us to have a conversation about your money. Isn't that interesting? Having a conversation about your money. Do you talk to people about your money? Most families don't talk about money. How to protect it, how to grow it, how to make it. You can join the conversation. 888-99-CHART.
Good advice. Spread your money around. Stick to a well-thought-out plan for carefully divvying up your money so no single calamity will destroy your portfolio. Want to talk about it? 888-99-CHART is how to get through right now.
Okay, so how do you choose the best online brokerage for you, the best brokerage firm? There's so many out there, Scottrade, E-Trade. I mean, there's unlimited, you know, TradeStation. There's unlimited. But some of the things you could look at, okay, one thing you really got to pay attention to is do they have minimums? Many brokerage firms have minimums. You have to have so much money with them before they want you. Now, thank goodness a lot of those minimums are low, $1,000 be common. But you also want to pay attention to, you know, cost in trading. Now, some of these brokerage firms have, you know, promotions and, you know, give you 10 free trades or 20 free trades, or if you put 50,000 in, they'll give you 25 free trades. They have promotions. So watch for that, because one of the things you want to pay attention to is the cost to trade, the fees to trade stocks, buy and sell. And that goes to you. Are you going to be an active trader? You're going to be a buy and holder and not trade at all? So if you're, you know, so the more you trade, the more the fees will eat into your profits. So you got to make sure if you're going to be an active trader, you have very low trading fees. Okay? And of course, that means you got to pay attention to what kind of style of investor you are. Do you need a lot of tech, a lot of, you know, technical help? Do you need search engines? What do you need out of your brokerage firm? Okay, and it depends on how advanced you are, you know, in your for instance, there's outside websites that have a lot better tools than most online brokerage firms. And some of them, and many of them are free. So it depends on how much you're going to get into this. Okay. And another thing you really want to look at is the ratings by customers, past customers, so customer service ratings. Look at, is anybody, what do they say about it? Is it a good experience for them, or is it too difficult to understand what's happening on that? You can't read the statements. Believe me, I had a custodian that was that way. It was very difficult to read the statements on the online system. But that was a trade-off from being very low trading fees. So you had that trade-off. You want a really great website. I mean, be nice, but they didn't have a great website. They had very low trading fees. They didn't put a lot of money in the website. Well, for me, I didn't need that. You know, I wanted the lower fees. I didn't need the great website. But maybe you do if you're going to be your own, you know, buying, selling, and investing your own, being your own money manager. If you're going to have a money manager like us, then you don't really care about these. But we're talking about the online brokerage firm that you want to use for you. Okay, for me, I don't care about much of the stuff except for the cost. I'm more interested in the cost. I want low costs. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, everybody. You listen to Invest Talk. Voice, tops on our list, of course, of priorities is always answering the questions. And our number is always the same, 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Steve and Justin. I'm a really big fan. I really enjoy the show. I have some questions about LCI, Lannett Pharmaceutical Company. It's dropped a lot, and I'm a little worried about it. But I was wondering what your thoughts were. Thank you so much.
Let's see. Let's take a look at Lannett. Develops generic versions of drugs that treat thyroid deficiency, migraines, for migraine, epilepsy, and glaucoma and other conditions. Looking at the company, it looks pretty solid. It has fallen from $60 a share, you know, so this is what she's concerned about, down to, you know, today it's at 18. And it, you know, it has not bottomed yet. It looks like it's still falling. Looking at the company, this is what we call a value trap. The P ratio is 5. So everybody looks at it and says, oh, this is so cheap. I need to buy this stock. Well, hold on there just a second. Take a look at their earnings for this year. Last year, 2015, they made $4.08 a share. This year, they're going to make $3.14 a share. Next year is $3.25 a share. Okay, that's still pretty good, but the sales growth is shrinking. It was 100% a year and a half ago, and the most recent quarter is 11%. So why is that? You know, that's really your number one question. A good sign is insiders are buying, not selling. But they recently cut their guidance for 2016. That's not a good sign. You have to wait. You want to wait till this stock bottoms, wherever that is, because on the chart, there doesn't seem to be a bottom yet. LCI, Lynette Corporation. You want to take a look at the debt level of the company. You want to make sure that that's not too high. Management owns 7%, and it's a $660 million company. Remember, any company that's small cap, which this one is, can be very volatile. Very volatile. So you want to make sure that their earnings are stable, that, you know, I see that from a recent article that they received FDA approvals for two products. So how much money, and that's just recently, and how much money is that going to produce for them? So you want to know that, to learn as much as you can before you buy the stock. Wait till it stops going down and then starts back up. Then you buy it. Sam is holding on Fremont. He's next. Then let's talk to you. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number. 888-99-CHART. C-H-A-R-T.
We thank you for subscribing to our podcast. On the next Invest Talk, you may not look forward to it, but it is essential, especially in a volatile and changing market like today. 8 ways to give your investments a spring cleaning. That's our main talking point on the next Invest Talk. And we hope you can join us then. Continue with the Tuesday, March 29th Invest Talk. Remember, when you're out of range of your favorite radio station, you can still hear us on investtalk.com. And if you have a question for Steve or Justin, 888-99-CHART is how to get through anytime, from anywhere.
888-99-CHART. Our phone is always open. Always open to questions, whether you're new to investing or you're one of the old pros, doesn't matter. Be as complex or simple as you want. 888-992-4278 is our anytime number.
Hey guys, this is Robert, Sacramento. I have a question about a REIT, Orchard Island Capital, ORC, and I was wondering if you guys would take a look at it and tell me what you think. I don't know if looking at all the fundamentals on a REIT is any different than a stock. I've never really done it before. I'll listen online to see what you guys think. Thank you.
It's a little different, yes, because of what a REIT is. This is Orchard Island Capital, ORC, headquartered in Florida. It's a REIT investing in residential mortgage-backed securities backed primarily by single-family residential mortgage loans. It's a very small company, $224 million size, and the sales are pretty volatile, up and down on quarter-to-quarter basis. I mean, in September quarter, the sales shrank by $5 million. In December quarter, they rose by $12 million. So very, very volatile there. They show a 16% dividend. But remember, a REIT is set. It has to pay 90% of its earnings in the form of a dividend. That's what it's required to do. So it's going to make $1.70 a share this year, and then $2.04 a share next year. Okay, well, it's a $10.33 stock. So it's a pretty low PE company. I mean, we're talking 4 or 5, and that's after moving up from $7.50 to $10.33. So it looks very reasonable, but the sales are very erratic. And therefore, it's not going to get a very high PE ratio based on how erratic those sales are. I mean, one quarter is up 181%. Another quarter is down 159%. It's huge swings. And therefore, it makes it, you know, less, it makes a high risk for investors to get into. So the company is right now on a earnings cycle up, but, you know, that could change in the next year. 2018 could be an earnings cycle down. It lost 21 cents in 2013 per share. after making 16 cents a year before, after losing 36 cents per share a year before that. Then jumping high, it's very erratic. So that's why it's low price. Don't think it deserves a low price because of that, you know, very erratic movement. So it's a high-risk play, but on a chart, it looks like it's going to go up to at least $11.50, $12. So I think this would be a good place to buy it. And based on this year's earnings and next year's earnings, it's very underpriced. Okay, and that's ORC, Orchard Island Capital. I wouldn't be a buyer of it because it's too erratic in its sales. Time for InvestTalk 101, understanding buy and sell orders. Do you know the difference between a market order, a limit order, a stop limit order? Do you know what those kind of orders are when you buy or sell a stock? You need to know those are the basic orders. You need to know what they are. Market order is the fastest way to buy or sell a stock, a market order. You place a market order, say, I want to sell it at market, or I want to buy it at market. The broker is going to sell it immediately, right at whatever price he can get. You'll get the worst fill. In other words, whatever, they'll fill your order, but you'll get the worst fill at a market order. Because they're going to give you whatever you get. They don't care about you. A limit order is a request to buy or sell a stock at a price that you specify. I want to buy this stock at $35.12. If it never trades to that number, you never get the stock. There's no guarantee that you'll buy or sell anything with a limit order. I like limit orders. A stop order. That's a request to buy or sell a stock at the prevailing market price, but only after a stock trades past your stop price. So if you say, I want to sell this stock at $35, and the stock is selling for $36, it won't sell until it drops below $35. Okay? Then it goes to a market order, basically, and sells whatever price it is under that. And finally, a stop limit order is a combination of a limit order and a stop order. Stop limit order is used to protect an investor's profit or limit your loss. Stop loss. Stop limit order. Once a stock moves past the stop price, then it's a limit order. I want to sell it at this exact price below this stop. Now, the danger is you still may not get that price. It may be a jump below that price and you'll never, and it keeps going down. Then you didn't sell the stock. MoneyZine.com has a handy definition and comparison of these different orders. So we have a link right under our talking point on InvestTalk.com that describes these kind of orders. And that's InvestTalk 101. Do you have a question about any of these kinds of things, buying and selling stocks? Why not ask? Call our anytime number, 888-99-CHART.
When you're an InvestTalk insider, you have new opportunities to learn. With concise, simplified reports written personally by Steve and Justin, important topics, annuities, wills and trusts, retirement programs, life insurance, an updated ETF list, and lots more. Sign up now on InvestTalk.com. And I should have mentioned, it's free.
Hey, this is John in Virginia. I'm calling to get y'all's thoughts on gold and specifically the gold miners and really one stock in particular that looks like they've restructured their debt and may be attractive at the value that it's at currently, and that's Yamana, and the ticker symbol is AUY. Thank you again for any insight you provide.
Yamana Gold, AUY, Canadian company engaged in the mining and exploration of gold and silver properties in South America, Mexico, and Canada. You know that we meaning KPP Financial, our firm, we have been buyers of gold. We started buying last year. We got a bit too early into it, but we're getting rewards now. Had a big update today, gold did, after moving sideways for the last 2 or 3 weeks. But it had a huge move up from its low made in January. So the gold plays, like a lot of the commodity plays, Chevron, Exxon, those kind of companies, a lot of the commodity plays, the stocks were selling way, very depressed because earnings were depressed, right? Because all commodities fell sharply last 2 or 3 years. So if you're looking at a commodity play, you know, you don't want to just look at the PE ratios. One of the better things to look for is book value and price to sales ratios. Okay. For instance, Yamada's book value right now is it's selling at 0.41 a book. In other words, 40% of the book value. If the company went bankrupt, you would get more than the stock price is, about 60% more. It's selling 40% below book volume. So that's one of the one things that you want to look at. Doesn't have a lot of debt. Is it going to survive? It's a $2.9 billion company selling for $3.10. They're going to make 37 cents a share this year after losing 8 cents a share last year. Next year, they're going to only make 13 cents. So unless gold goes up, this stock is not going to continue higher. Gold prices have to go up. And that's when you're buying these gold mining companies, you have to bet what direction gold is going up. And therefore, you want to think about, well, what direction is a dollar going to go? You want it to go down. You would like inflation to come back. You would like turmoil in the world. Gold goes up on those factors. Okay, so it's more than just buying the company. You got to think a little bit beyond just the company itself. Because it's overvalued if you go by a PE ratio. I mean, it's only going to make 37 cents next year. But the, I mean, this year. Then next year, it's only going to make 13. It's a $3.10 stock. You know, so you have to have faith in gold prices. We don't own this particular one, but we own four or five gold and silver positions. I don't mind you buying this company based on what gold is going to do. I think there's others out there that are better. 888-99-CHART. That's AUY, by the way, Yamada Gold, Inc. 888-992-4278. Corporate profit margins. I have been reporting on them that they're shrinking. They're shrinking year over year. As a percentage of GDP, they've fallen from 12.5% to a little over 10%. Now, just to give you a little scale, it was down to 7% during the recession, the deep recession. It was down to 7%. So 12.5% down to 10%. Okay, it recovered from that 7% up to 12.5%, I think it was 2013. Now it's fallen again. And it will likely stay on this lower path for the next few years. Probably not going to change. And it may even get into the result of this is going to be probably, in historical terms, when this starts to happen, the returns on the S&P go single digits, low single digits. Your return, so you're going to be looking at probably low single digits unless this can turn around. And I don't see it turning around for several years. I don't. Okay, so don't think in terms of, well, we're gonna get 10, 15% return on the S&P. Probably not. Probably not. And it, just so you know, in the most recent quarter, remember when they revised the GDP number for the last 3 months of last year from 1% growth to 1.4%, and everybody was, hey, that's great. That was a pretty good move up. It was, we thought it was only going to be 1%. Deep in that report was a 2.2% lowering of corporate profits for that year, lowering of margins by 2.2%. If this is going to turn around, we need either higher PE multiples, we need or higher accelerating growth in sales, or expanding profit margins. You've got to have these things turn. And I don't see an increase in the PE multiple. I don't see accelerating growth. I'm not sure we see that. And we're not getting expanding profit margin. We're getting shrinking profit margins. So that's not very positive for very much growth in the S&P 500 for the next year or two, three, three, 1 to 3 of the years, you know. And, you know, anything that upsets this apple cart means the stock market is going to go down hard. So we're in a pretty precarious place. Just so you understand that, you know, not everything is wonderful. It's not. We've had a 6-week rally in the stock market, but that's only bringing us back to where we were at the beginning of the year, into December. into last year. We're only back to where there. We're not up. And last year was flat to down. So we're not seeing profits, are we? I would like to see single-digit profits in the SB this year. That's better than it was last year. Better than it is so far this year. Do you need a real estate review? For just about everyone, your home is an important piece of your retirement planning puzzle. Why not get a second opinion? Now, Justin Klein and his team of realty professionals are planning a one-day real estate review for a limited number of our listeners on April 11th. And if you're interested, just go to investtalk.com, click on Contact Justin, and write Real Estate Review. Someone will get back to you, set up an appointment. And if you have questions for me right now, time to call. I'm ready with you whenever you are. 888-99-CHART. You can get through anytime.
My name is Robert. I'm calling from San Jose. My question is, how important is it, in Steve's opinion, if you have three or four rental homes, to put each one in a separate LLC? And what's the real benefit of that versus risk versus reward for that? Again, what is the risk versus reward benefit for putting each home, if you have two or three rental homes, in a LLC course? Thank you.
Frankly, I don't see a lot of reward for that. I see just an increase in costs because each of those LLCs had to file tax returns and do their own accounting for each. And I understand the purpose. The purpose is to try to protect your personal assets and any other assets and other LLCs from people suing you or whatever. But there's a better way to do it, in my opinion, and that is to get high limit insurance on those properties. Remember, what's going to happen? What's going to happen is people are going to go on your property, hurt themselves, and they're going to sue you. The property will burn down. Okay, those are things you need to insure. You can insure yourself against, and then you can get a very high umbrella limit on all three properties, and just have them in one LLC. Now, you can do three, but then you're going to have three different limited liability corporations, and then three different tax returns, and you got to keep track of all the specific costs and everything per property. It's just making your life more complex. That's not how I did it. I mean, I've had numerous properties at one time. I did it the way I described. One under one umbrella, one LLC on that. Mine was actually an S corporation. And then high liability limits. So if someone did come after me, I had insurance to protect all my assets. Okay. I wouldn't have them in my personal name. You're on the right path to have them in LLCs or S-Corps. Keep them separate that way. Our InvestTalk Anytime number is 888-99-CHART. I'm here to answer your questions. Any money questions you want, like the real estate question they just had. 888-99-CHART. Chart. Negative interest rates is a high-risk experiment. Now, we know that in numerous countries in Europe, they're negative, Germany being the main, most largest and most important economy in Europe. In Japan, they're negative. And if you sit back and think about it, what does this do? What it really does, it confiscates money, transferring wealth from savers to borrowers, right? Look, I'm the German government. I'm lending money, and I will let you buy my German bonds, but you have to pay me. You, Mr. Saver, that has to go buy bonds, you have to pay me, and I'm the one that's borrowing money, yours, but you have to pay me to borrow your money. Makes no sense on the surface of it, but that's exactly what's happening. Now, what is really distressful is it's not really boosting growth, economic growth. It's not really working. And if you think about it a little further, the banks' profit margins are shrinking and shrinking and shrinking as they lower interest rates. They're making less and less money. And I just talked about corporate profit margins shrinking. the banks are having a heck of a time with this. The banks don't want to have negative interest rates. They're not going to lower their interest rates, the interest rate they charge people to borrow money from them, to as low as the government does. They're trying to hold the line because they want to make profits. That means they're probably not going to lend as much business money out. Most of the reason is because there's no demand for the loans. You know, you can make loans as cheap as you want, but if there's no demand, if the people don't want it, the corporations don't want to borrow money, then it's worthless. It doesn't seem to be the right path to growth of the economy. And it didn't, you know, it started to show very clearly here in the U.S. that lower QE, more QE wasn't really boosting growth. Look all the QE we did. What kind of growth did we end up with? We didn't get that. Initially, this works pretty well, lowering interest rates. Okay, that initially works well. But once they're really low and they stay low for a length of time, then trying to lower them more, all the borrowing is out there. The companies don't need to borrow more money. They got plenty of it now, or they've already borrowed it. So lowering rates doesn't really push them to borrow more money. Now you have negative rates. How's that going to work? Long term, how's that going to work? How is that going to benefit the economy? It's just not. Well, we can see that so far, it's not working. And it's very clear that it's not working. I think these countries, the EU and Japan, think it eventually will work. Well, it's an experiment. We'll see. Your questions come first. And, of course, last. So let's take this last couple of minutes to answer a question. Joe in San Jose called on our anytime number, 888-99-CHART.
Hi. I had a question about my 401k. I have about $30,000 in there. I was thinking of cashing it out because of some financial troubles that we're going through right now. I wanted to ask, how much would I be taxed on that, on $30,000? I'm probably going to make about $60,000 this year. Okay, thanks a lot.
Okay, so what happens if you take that $30,000 out before retirement, then it's going to be added to your $60,000, and now you're going to be paying income tax on $90,000, and on that $30,000, you're going to pay a 10% penalty of $3,000 for taking it out before you retire. Huge, huge tax burden that you don't need to incur. That's not a wise thing to do. I understand if you have to, you have to, but make sure you have to, because that's a last resort. You know, that's why you put it in there, for your retirement, not for a living. You know, it's just not a good idea. I understand if you have to, and, you know, by all means, but it's going to cost you, you know, since you're going from 60 to 90, you're going to be at the highest tax bracket probably, unless you have good write-offs. And you're going to pay $3,000, 10% penalty on that $30,000. Ouch. Our time is up. I hope you found this hour worthwhile. I hope so. Remember, if you want to communicate with me directly, just head to the investtalk.com website and click on Contact Steve. That's an email that comes directly to me. Love to have you as a client. I'm Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Justin Klein, everybody at KPP, thank you for listening today. You're welcome here tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.